They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
They're crazy enough to let me be in charge.
Russ Ivanek.
8 out of 10 from the judges. 5 out of 10 from the German judge.
And Justin Marcus.
Our best defense has been long, hard, and yellow all year long.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, so on the plus side, the Lions aren't 0-1. But to be fair, they're not 1-0 either. That's the hell we're going through here in Detroit. And we're going to cover it over the next hour or so. I'm Eric Dorsch. This is Armchair Sports Talk. I'm going to bring in the guy who's suffering along with me because he had to sit through not one, but two overtimes that never should have been. Russ, how you doing? You're all right, buddy? Everything's okay? You're living life as well as you can?
Well, I think I speak for all of Metro Detroit when I say just resoundingly.
Yeah, yeah.
No more unpaid overtime. I am tired of this shit.
Yeah, you and I had a rough weekend. Yeah, you and I, and then there's the guy who's sitting here with a big smile on his face because his team decided, oh, look, we're going to develop an offense. For no reason, we're going to develop an offense. But in order to get that offense, we're going to have the ugliest freaking jerseys you've ever seen in your life. Dude, you literally looked like Oregon slept with like its ugly cousin, and that's what they got out of it. That's what you looked like out on the field the other day. Oh, this is Justin Marcus, by the way, everybody.
It was brutal. What they looked like? They looked like the failed mock-up version of the Easter peeps that were about to be packaged and sent across America. Like that, like pale green was ugly. But what we did? Welcome Elijah Collins.
Yeah, you did.
Absolutely beautiful.
You looked like your team got dressed but forgot to pack their pants. So they borrowed like the Spirit Squad's pants, and that's what you got out of it. It wasn't good, Jay. I mean, you guys got the win, so far be it for me to put you down, but they were not the most flattering of jerseys. And what's sad is we all knew it was coming. These jerseys were released a while ago. You knew the day was coming, but even on that day, it was tough to watch. That was a day I'm glad I listened to the game on the radio. I didn't have to see it. So,
yeah, I wish I would have done the same, trust me, but it was too beautiful.
Yeah. Hey, to each their own. Russ, since we've got such a painful experience, I think we're going to have to get it all done in a row. So we'll lead off with State first, because then we can go through U of M and then go on to the Lions. And we can all suffer with the Lions, but Jay, your Spartans actually had a pretty good week. They had a pretty good week. 51-17 win. It's Western Michigan, so take that as you want. Listen, I put this in my notes, and we were just talking about the jerseys. So the jerseys were terrible, but all I can say is if it guarantees an offense like that, you need to call D'Antonio and tell him to wear those things every frickin' week, because let's face it, we've all talked about it, and you've even been in agreement with it, Jay. This is a team that doesn't have a lot of offense, so you're going to take that offense however you can get it. Lewerke, 23 of 32 for 314, 3 touchdowns, throws an interception. You mentioned him. I'll let you talk about him. Elijah Collins, 17 carries, 192 yards. Didn't get into the end zone, but still, yards are yards. And then you got Daryl Stewart, 10 catches, 185 yards. I mean, you guys had a day, Jay.
Yeah, and I will taper it with the understanding that it's Western Michigan, just because, as I said in our last podcast, they let two teams put up 49 apiece against them, and then we put up 51 on them. So Western can't show up against the bigger teams, which is fine, but I won't diminish what they did. Lewerke, Collins, everything was beautiful, and I loved every second of it. Collins has got some speed and some abilities. So that gives me some, you know, good feelings that we have our running back. I will find some negative in it. And Lewerke with those crossing route passes that it's either too late or too early, it gets tipped and it gets interception, is becoming like a classic move for him, and I don't want to see any more of it.
Yeah.
And that's a problem going down the road for him. But for that day, it looked great. The jerseys didn't, and we better not wear those against Arizona State.
I will say, Jay, and this is just, I want to focus back into, obviously, you guys had a great week, but I don't think you can expect 51 points a week every week. So I want to circle back into the side that needs to be looked at. You guys let Western put up 17 points on you. Obviously, when you win by 40, who cares? But still, I think you got to look at that. Western's not a very good team. They shouldn't have put up that kind of points. And when you're touting a top defense in the country, 17 points is about all you can afford to give up when you don't necessarily know where the offense is going to be from week to week.
Yeah, they got a little lax. Their tight end Richie ended up getting, I think, the first scoring play for Western. But I too would have liked them to continue to dominate, and they gave up. That apparently was the trend for some Michigan teams this weekend.
Yeah.
So I know. But I would rather not have the points that Western got.
No,
some of that, I think at least half of that came with the second unit of defense out there. So it's not exactly a one-to-one comparison here. It was the backups that gave up at least that last touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they gave up 10. That's a fair number then. Okay, that's fair. Like I said, I this is the ugliest jerseys I've ever seen. I did everything I could to watch this. So let's, because this is Jay's team, and I know Russ and I are going to have a lot of fun with this next one. Let's look ahead to this week, Jay. This has to be a week that you're kind of like, I could do without. I mean, listen, I'm going off what ESPN has on the page. You know, I'll bring it up and look at it. 88% favorite. You're given 15 points. The over-under is 41.5. So they're expecting some points somewhere, obviously. They're expecting you to at least be a 2-touchdown favorite. But this is a team that took you guys down last year. So as you look ahead to this week, obviously it's tough to compare two teams, but are you going into this week with a little bit more confidence than maybe if it had been last year's team?
There's one thing that gives me confidence, which I'll save for a moment, but what makes me go, oh boy, I want to close my eyes at 4 o'clock on Saturday, is the stats so far through the year with points per game, passing yards per game, and rushing yards per game. They're all in the same neighborhood of each other between Arizona State and Michigan State.
Yeah.
I know you have to look at opponents to really try to find their true values of where they should be at, but I'm nervous. Legit. Like, I have flashbacks to last year. We've talked about this, but the one piece that does give me confidence is the money line on the game. State is -700. So you got to put up $700 just to win 100. So that lucrative of a bet gives me some help that we should win, but it could be close and dangerous, which I do not like at all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Arizona State has played Kent State and I believe it was Sacramento State or San Antonio?
Sacramento State. Yep.
Sacramento State.
That's a college, apparently.
That's okay. To each their own, and good for you guys. I hope your season's at 1-1. So your season's going about middle of the road. Good for you. Happy. Congratulations. But Jay, if I can get this to ever go back to where it was supposed to be. Dumb computer. You actually touched on a point I was going to make, because when you just at glance of not looking at the who they played and what, Lewerke's numbers are not that far off of Daniels, starting quarterback for Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Running back, they're about 40, give or take 40 yards behind you, but their quarterback's got 80 or almost 80 yards more passing. Receiving, number one and number two, or number one receiver for each team are 4 yards difference in receiving yards. When you look at it, these are pretty close matches. And to be fair, you guys played Tulsa and you played Western. So it's not, I mean, obviously none of us knew what Sacramento State was until just 2 seconds ago, but probably similar teams in the fact that neither of them are really planning on knocking on Clemson's door to unseat them for the national championship. So when you look at this game, you are a favorite, but I feel like this is a game where this is going to be the real test before getting into Big Ten play. This is going to be the one where if you can go out and Russ, correct me if I'm wrong here, if you can go out and put up another 35 points to their 10 to 12 to, you know, give or take, then you go into the Big Ten play feeling a little more comfortable. I mean, that seems like a pretty fair assessment of what State has to set as the benchmark, correct?
Yeah, I think that's a great opportunity for him. Like, this is a momentum game. This is, last year was last year, and here's where we prove it. Right? I actually showed up on offense against Western. Now get to exercise the demon. Like, there's no reason that Justin should be so nervous, but I'm sure he's not the only one that is because of how that game went. Let's not forget how many injuries it took to get to a 16-13 loss. And now Daniels, that you mentioned, he's a true freshman quarterback who's has two starts now, right? Kent State and Sacramento State. Now he has to play against this defense for an ASU squad that has run the ball more, but has really only been productive through the air. Yeah, that's a big test for a true freshman.
It is. And Jay, this again, this isn't me trying to drive the dagger a little harder, but this is a legit question I want to ask, because you are a Spartan fan. I think you would go as far to say Lewerke is your guy this year. This is who you want back there.
I don't want to see Rocky Lombardi single snap. No.
Let's call just for argument's sake, let's call Tulsa, Western, Sacramento State, and Kent State pretty equal of matchups. Like no one's really got the favor in schedule, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Little concerning that a true freshman has better passing stats than a guy who's, I believe, is a senior and has played the last two years of college football?
No, I wouldn't read too much into it just because it's all situational. I mean, Lewerke's numbers are really truer, probably closer to the Western game than they are than the Tulsa game. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but I didn't know that about their quarterback for Arizona State, so you're not making this any easier for me to understand, because I feel like that's like the perfect recipe that he could go off on us because it's unexpected. So,
yeah. They announced it.
I'm torn, man.
They announced it like probably about like two, three weeks before the season started. So probably about a month ago that true freshman was going to be their starting quarterback over a guy who I believe is like a redshirt sophomore or junior, something like that. So yeah, it's going to be I'm watching this game for the fact that there is a chance of an upset, but also for the fact that State's going to go out there and they're going to play pedal to the metal the whole time, because they don't want these guys to even sniff the ability to take the lead. They want this to be over by halftime. Like Russ said with the Western game, you want to see that second team defense go in there and get some reps. So if some guys go down, we know where the backups are that can step up and play. So it's that time, Jay. I'll let you go first. Let you kind of get it out of the way. Once again, 88% favorite. Spread's 15. Over/under's 41.5. So you got some points to play with. At the end of the day, what do you see this game ending as?
So preseason, I picked them to lose this game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to respect the spread of 15. But I'm going to die on the money line. And I'm going to have MSU winning and covering 33-14.
33-14. Okay.
That's all the right. Over as well.
Yeah. So you're good there. 33-14. All right. That
money line's too sweet.
It is.
That's negative 700.
It is. But at the same time, you spotting them two touchdowns in the spread is just, that seems to me like a reach, because like I said, do I think your offense is as bad as last year and previous sightings show? No. Do I think you're a 51-point-a-game team? Absolutely not. Do I think that you've got some very, very talented players on that team? You do. You've got playmakers, but those guys cannot expect Collins to have 192 yards every week, because it's just not going to happen. So I think it's great. I picked you guys to lose this game in the preseason. I'm sticking to that loss.
Attaboy.
I'm sticking to that loss. I don't care about the spread. I don't care about the over-under. I think this is going to be first team to three touchdowns. So I'm predicting it to be a 24-17. I think it's going to be close, but I just don't think I think your offense is going to take that step back and is going to struggle a little bit. I have this being a 24-17 Arizona State win. So we'll see what happens with it. All right, Russ. Well, you're the tiebreaker. Jay's got the W. I've got the L. Well, how do you see this one shaking out?
Well, first off, I don't appreciate the tie reference there. Yeah, I'm still recovering from Sunday.
That was poor. That was poor of me. Russ, you get to have the final say on which way this goes. What is it?
Much better. I appreciate that. So I had it a win in the preseason. I'm going to keep it as a win. I got 28-10. I expect the Michigan State offense to take a step back, but that step back from 51 points is still a far cry from what they're going to need to beat Arizona State and their true freshman quarterback.
Fair.
I don't expect Collins and Stewart to have big games again, but you don't have to save the seat at the table for Elijah anymore because he's going. He's already at dinner and he's going to keep eating. Another big game for him. Okay. They're going to do it.
All right. So it looks like I'm the odd man out this time. That's completely fine. I can handle that. Jay,
one thing just to throw in there. When you were talking about the comparable competition, Sacramento State's not even in the FBS. Oh. So I'd argue that's not so equivalent.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
Yeah. They're in the FCS with the likes of Gardner-Webb Running Bulldogs.
I mean, that's a quality powerhouse junior college. Okay. That's a legitimately okay school.
Yeah. Right up there with Presbyterian Blue Hose.
Come again?
That's actually their fight song.
Oh,
wait, are they really called the Blue Hose?
Yeah, BLUEHOSE.
Ooh, that's scrummy. That's scrumptious.
Yep.
Oh God.
Oh, Jay is in a great mood now after that one.
I mean, we've got other things. I don't know that they're quite as dirty. There's like the Fighting Camels, the Great Danes, the Blue Hens, Elon Phoenix. Ooh. Not sure if that was just Tesla bought a team or not. I don't know. Could be.
Yeah, he got sick of not having everything, so he had to buy a team. That's fair.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Long live Chad Kanoff.
Yeah, long live Chad. For those that don't know, the Detroit Lions decided to part ways with backup quarterback Chad Kanoff. We're all having a hard time with it because the possibilities are endless when you speak about this name. I mean, we have a learned doctor sending us Chad Kanoff things every 5 minutes. Shout out to D.O. Paul Rowe. Because when a guy who honestly is the smartest person we know is sending you Chad Kanoff things, it's great. And then 2 minutes later, he's, talking about his, his work day in the clinic. So it's an enjoyable experience, guys. It really is.
Yeah.
All right, Russ. Now for a not enjoyable experience.
Oh, it was awful the whole way through.
It was. Here's how I look at this. I want to put this out because obviously I didn't go to this school. I would like to say that my fandom runs as deep as yours, but by all means, you have the ownership rights on this. This doesn't even feel like a win to me. It's a win in the column. At the end of the year, it's going to count as a W, but this was absolutely unbearable to watch. Great credit to Army. They have one very, very efficient, albeit boring, offense, but it gets the job done. I mean, anytime you rush for 200 yards on a Big Ten team, that's pretty good. I mean, you had a good day rushing. Your quarterback didn't even throw for 50 yards, but he only tried to throw the ball four times.
Four times, and one was an interception.
That should never have happened. It shouldn't even have been close. And to be fair, I do feel like a little bit of the momentum was taken away when we took that fumble back for a touchdown that they ruled wasn't really a touchdown because he mysteriously was never down when he picked the ball up, but he had to have been, and it wasn't reviewable. Very next play, Shea Patterson fumbles. But I feel like a little bit of the momentum went out the window with that. But at the same time, this game should have been won 42-21. We had much more talent on the outsides. We were more athletic. There's no reason it should have been close, but this to me was one of those games where it's a quicksand game. You do one thing and you just start sinking and sinking, and before you know it, everything you do seems to be a massive mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I assume you probably feel pretty similar to that, but a 24-21 double overtime win against Army is not something that I think you can build off of.
I mean, overtime victory over Army last year was able to propel Oklahoma pretty far, so maybe it's not a dead end.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
No, I'm of course being a little facetious.
Oh, I know you are.
That was, Army played a flawless game last year against Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. They epitomized the trap that running against a triple option that no one else runs can do to a good school who's never really seen it. That was not the case this past Saturday. Army did not play perfect. Michigan held them to their lowest yards per play and yards per rush since 2015, and this still happened. Right, we've looked at effectively 9 quarters of Michigan football. We've had 8 fumbles. Now, at least one of those wasn't really Shea's fault, because anytime you get the shit knocked out of you when you don't see it coming, it might be on someone else too.
Yeah,
and that happened. So this O-line isn't living up to their name. Yeah, Charbonnet got 100 yards, but it's on 33 carries. That's awful.
Well, that's something I was going to bring up to you too. I mean, another 100 yard rushing game. That's something you can kind of boast about, but 33 carries to get it against.
That's awful.
But to me, I also have to say, I almost feel like your key to success in this game would have been to just kind of give up on the run. You're legitimately trying to run the ball on a team where all they do in practice every day is run the ball. Like, mm-hmm. You've got to be pretty good at run defense, or else your scout defense is just going to be terrible and you're never going to be able to figure anything out. I almost feel like Harbaugh should have looked at the guys and gone, hey, let's try to air it out. They don't have to cover passes very often, so let's make their corners work for it.
Yeah, well, how about Nico Collins? 3 targets, 2 catches.
Mm-hmm.
Guy's okay. Like, who's covering him for Army? Like, no, throw it up to him. Try something. It was a bit embarrassing how plain and vanilla the offense gotten, and overly conservative. Like, they were afraid they were going to fumble again, which was kind of a concern, I suppose. But if you play scared, you might already lose.
I agree.
It's just painful. And if it wasn't for LaVert Hill with that goal line interception, might not have even made it to overtime.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would like to...
Can I ask one quick question to the both of you?
Absolutely.
Of course.
I might already know the answer, but based on perception and storyline, would you have rather have won in double overtime or lost in regulation in terms of what people are extracting from your game?
I think it would feel the exact same, to be dead honest. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that losing in overtime, I mean, losing in regulation, to me, like, even though it says 2-0 in our win column or in our record column, I see it as a 1-1 kind of thing. I almost feel like the loss would have at least, you know, it would have justified how I felt. It would have actually been a loss. Seeing a win after this game, it doesn't feel that way for me. I see it as a loss either way.
Okay. Oh, I'm 100% saying I'd rather the win every single time. I'd rather the win in overtime, like 10 overtimes, however many we can go, all of them, over a loss at any point. At the end of the season, if everything else goes well, it's easier to look over, well, you won, but you barely won, as opposed to that one loss there. Or maybe it takes you from one loss to two to three. That can be a big deal.
Right. Yeah, but to me, like, okay, my only reason for saying that is, like you said, at the end of the year, when you go back and look at the record, if it says 10 and, you know, or 11-1,
mm-hmm.
no one knows all of those 11 wins. But if we do go 11-1,
loss.
Well, I'm just saying, but if they know that one loss, but at the same time, that committee they go through everything you do with a fine tooth comb. So if we're 11-1, you're still going to have that committee going, well, yeah, you're 11-1, and you're, you know, the one of the top, you know, 5 teams in the country, but you did almost lose to Army, so yeah, you're not in. And then we're right where we would be if we had a 10-2 or a 9-3 season. You know what I mean? You're still playing for a January 1st bowl.
I think you're slightly better, right? Because maybe you beat all the 10-2 teams, even if you don't beat all the 11-1 teams. Whereas if you lose to Army, you're a 10-2 team that lost to Army, and that's a bit of a blemish. So maybe you don't beat out all the 10-2 teams.
Okay. My only question is, how boring is it to be a wide receiver for Army?
They had one guy. He had two catches.
One dude. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. How boring is it to be a wide receiver? Hey, Mom, I got a scholarship offer. Where, baby? Army. Oh, God. Okay.
Catch a cold before you catch a pass.
Yeah, you're not going to the league. Yeah. Sorry.
That was a good one.
listen, I wrote down two notes for this game because honestly, I could go crazy over, but Jay, I want to get your opinions on this game. These are my two notes, and then I'll let you play off of them, and you know, you can give me what you think. Russ, first one's kind of for you too because you know we're both U of M fans. My first note to this is Shea needs to take a seat. McCaffrey needs to get some snaps. Fumbles are unacceptable and will kill us come Big Ten play. We need to, you know, Shea's a good quarterback, but Shea, there's something going on with Shea right now that he can't hold on to the football. I'm not saying, you know, McCaffrey's the sure-handed guy, but we need to get him in there to find out because once we hit Big Ten play, we can't have a guy coming off the bench to save us every week. He needs to be in there. He needs to be play ready so that if this keeps happening with Shea, Harbaugh needs to pull the, you know, he needs to pull the trigger and get the switch.
Yeah, the two takeaways I had on it is it's kind of the same thing. I want Christian McCaffrey. I'm sorry, I want Dylan McCaffrey.
We want Christian McCaffrey too.
Yeah, we want Christian. We love Christian McCaffrey. That'd be great.
Hey, Charbonnet is a great runner too. I like him. No, but I want McCaffrey to start for you guys against Wisconsin. Like I'm done with Shea Patterson. What was the joke I had? Shea Butterhands or something like
that.
Yeah, like,
Shea Butterhands.
Like I'm ready for McCaffrey to start for you guys. So there's some hope there. I also can see some hope that's the type of game that your team can look at and go, oh shit, we almost messed it up, and then turn it on to 100. So maybe they can build off that. But if they start Shea Patterson, I don't know if that's the right guy to start that momentum.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think. Listen, Russ. I think I've been a little on the border when it comes to Shea over the last 6 months as we get ready for all this, but I just think McCaffrey is the better option right now. Shea's a great athlete. He's a heck of a quarterback when he's on. The problem is whether it's just this offense not meshing well with his skill set or just he's got stone hands right now. It happens. Some guys just, they have that time period where they just, for the life of them, cannot hold on to the ball. So, I think we're going into Big Ten play. Obviously, we have a bye this week. We're going into Big Ten play. We cannot afford two turnovers against Wisconsin. It's a death sentence no matter what we do the rest of the game. There's just no way. That's how I feel about it.
No, you're absolutely right that turnovers will kill you against a good opponent. And we can't afford that no matter who it is. Let's not forget that McCaffrey's got at least one fumble to his name this season, too.
Yeah, that's fair.
He's a talented guy, but I also do agree that Shea's not 100%. He's not 100% physically, because it looks like something's up with his oblique, and he's not 100% mentally, because some of his reads, what was supposed to be a strength of Shea Patterson's, it was his read, how we saw the game. It's not there, and I don't know if he's trying to protect himself, and that's why it's not there, or he just has not fully grasped this offense. But he's not 100% there, and I hate a week three bye, but it couldn't come at a better time for this team. I'm still with Patterson starting, assuming he can take this week and get healthy. But if he's not 100% again, you're not – whatever aspirations you had for this season, if Patterson just hurt the whole season, I don't think you're getting there.
Yeah.
So if that means taking off another week – that's fine. McCaffrey is probably at least as good as Patterson has shown with him not being 100%, but I think 100% Patterson is still better.
That's fair. But would you say that he's going to have a quick hook in Wisconsin if
you
see what we're seeing?
Yeah, if we see he tries to hand off the ball and doesn't take the wide open grass that he's been given each of the last 2 weeks again,
yeah,
right? If he holds on too long and fumbles again, if he doesn't throw the damn ball to Nico Collins when no one can cover him, yeah, pull him because you can't afford that. But assuming he gets healthy, I still think he's your better option to try and win that win.
Yeah.
Get that win.
I have a second point, but I just because I know he listens to the show weekly. Shea, listen here.
yeah, of course.
I was never as good a quarterback as you were, but I, like you, went through a little phase of stone hands. I could not hold on to the ball. You know what fixed that for me? It was this really cool thing. My dad drove to Dunham's for me, the sporting goods store in Farmington where we all grew up. He bought me gloves, receiver gloves. They're sticky. They hold on to the ball. You can still throw with them. Kurt Warner made it to the Hall of Fame wearing them. Get some goddamn gloves. Hold on to the ball. You're the guy that's supposed to be getting us through the Big Ten with ease, and it's not going to happen with you putting it on the ground four times in two games. It's not going to happen. I'll take one of those away for you because you got blindsided. I'll take that one away. Three times is still three times too many. So, gloves.
Can we get him one of those lanyards that, like, you put your badge on?
Yeah. Like you get equipment for free. Walk over to the equipment guy and say, hey, those things you just gave Nico, give me a pair. I'd like some. Thank you.
As a quarterback, Eric, would you also recommend like a Chad Kanoff session? Would that help him improve?
Good Chad Kanoff session right before, but you don't want to do it with the throwing arm. Learn to be ambidextrous. You don't want to pull a muscle Chad Kanoffing before the game. That's a bad idea.
Review that film, right? Dim the lights. Nice film review session with Chad Kanoff. That'll get him right.
My second one, and this was me trying to find the little bit of good in this game. The defense for Michigan, when you think about it, was actually okay. When you consider that Army's offense is a very efficient offense. I mean, they want to go very slow. They want to wear you down. They want to make you make the mistake, and they'll find the read. I mean, 21 points is too many points to give up against Army, but all in all, they were pretty good. For a team that just wants to run the ball, I felt like their fullback rushed for 200 yards by himself. So defense actually was okay, and I can kind of live with it. But, Russ, I don't know about you. That offense, it looked very, very conservative that second half, almost like Harbaugh was just saying, we're gonna play it safe. They need to understand that you're a Division I team that usually has a top five recruiting class. You have the best players. Go out there and use them against Middle Tennessee, Army, all these fluff games. Go out there and get these guys in rhythm. Don't sit there and hand the ball off 33 times to a running back so he can average 2 yards a carry. I'm not great at math. Three carries, averaging 2 yards, does not equal a first down. We need first downs. So, just for me, that offense got way too conservative. I don't know if it's that Harbaugh took the play calling from Gattis or Gattis just isn't the right guy to be calling plays. And I understand it's two games, so it's a little early to start saying our offensive coordinator needs to change. But they need to figure something out because you need to be able to effectively execute an offense that's not 3 yards a carry and we're punting every time.
Yeah, no, you're dead on that they were way too conservative in the second half. In the first game, they tried everything, right, and tried nothing more than once and couldn't find a rhythm. This time, they tried exactly one thing and drove it into the ground. Like, yeah, 3 yards per carry out of a guy that has 30-plus carries. No one else got more than three carries. Like, Shea technically has eight, but that's because they count sacks. But, yeah, try something else. You're exactly right that we expected more out of Gattis. I mean, I'm not going to call for his head, but thank goodness that the defense showed up. I mean, only 14 points in regulation should keep you in any game.
Yeah.
But, this offense needs to show something more. The scary part is it could be any number of things as to why. Could be Patterson not understanding, Patterson hurt. Could be Gattis not knowing how to call a play. Maybe the other players don't get the game plan. Like, it's concerning that it's week two and we have no idea what the problem is on offense.
I will say this. Part of me feels like it's that Harbaugh has spent so much time in his post-playing career, coaching career, calling the plays. You know, he's the quarterback guru. He got, you know, he made Stanford into an amazing program with Luck. Then he, mm-hmm. you know, then he goes to the NFL and makes the Super Bowl. I think he's just spent so much time having that offense under his control that I think he genuinely isn't comfortable saying, here's the playbook, go ahead. I feel like if it gets a little shaky, he's one of those guys that flips the mic on and goes, all right, I'm taking over. And it's like, you can't do that. Gattis is the new guy here. He needs to establish that he knows what he's doing. I mean, it's a weird comparison, but we let Jim Bob Cooter control the Lions offense for an entire year. Gattis has some better players on his team, so why don't we let him, you know, take a little bit of time to get adjusted, get it going. That's what these first two games are for. I think that it's really going to mess with them if a little bit of sign of adversity comes and Harbaugh pulls the chain and starts taking the offense under his wing again.
Yeah, it's hard to have everyone buy in and trust the system when the head coach doesn't.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. So I'm going to make a very bold prediction, Justin. Michigan won't go to overtime this week.
And they won't fumble.
I don't know. Shane might drop the remote trying to find a game to watch this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, bye week, like Russ said, couldn't come at a better time. Just take a breath. You got Wisconsin. Hopefully they'll get a little banged up. I don't know. Do they play someone this week? Hopefully they'll get a little banged up playing them. So that we got a better chance. Let's switch over. We can all suffer together now. Justin, come into the suffering room with us because we're going to talk about our Detroit Lions. 27-27 tie. Dear God, guys, we were up by like two touchdowns at halftime and somehow this went to shit.
18 mm-hmm. points in the fourth quarter. There's an 18-point lead.
18-point lead going into the fourth quarter. I wanna before we dive too deep into the Lions, I would like to just say, first half was how I expected Kyler Murray to look.
Mm-hmm.
Second half showed me that this guy is going to be able to make plays, but under no circumstance should you have a rookie quarterback throwing the ball 54 times. This isn't Texas Tech, Cliff. That's not a good idea. The only reason you were able to pull it off is because, as we've said all offseason, the Lions secondary is okay. It's not great. You go up against a team with a really good secondary, he is going to have 54 pass attempts, and about 12 of them are going to be interceptions. This is, you have a top level running back. One, explain to me why he only had the ball 18 times. I don't get that. I mean, in retrospect, you tied us, so whatever, it works. But at the same time, Kyler Murray, he looked good in the second half. He looked like a quarterback that, you know, he got his feet wet, he got comfortable, he started to be able to make plays. Leaned on Fitzgerald quite a bit. I mean, 8 catches for 113 yards.
Yeah.
Old man Fitzgerald, dude, the guy can still play football. So, I mean, there's a guy that, you know, he's already slipped one arm into the gold jacket. We're just waiting for him to put the other one in. So
I hated that it was him, by the way, that led that charge.
Right?
But you know what? To me, it was, believe me, I didn't like it either, but to me, it was showing that the guy really is one of the best to ever do it, and even if this is his last hurrah and he's probably going to go out with a not-so-great record, he still showed that, hey, I can still play football, I can still take over and make this happen. So, yeah, I didn't want it to happen either, but at the same time, the guy's a hell of a football player. But I want to circle back to the fact that there's no reason on earth that he should have chucked the ball that many times, but I have to eat my own words. 29 of 54, way too many pass attempts, but 308 passing yards, 2 TDs, 1 interception. Those are solid numbers for a rookie debut. And yet again, the Detroit Lions, we make your quarterback look good, even if he really isn't that good. So welcome to the league. And I expect some good things out of him. He's a heck of a player, and hopefully they don't get him killed, and hopefully his right arm doesn't fall off by week 8. So, we'll see.
It might just get him killed. 5 sacks. It lost 33 yards.
Yeah.
Just on sacks.
Oh, I saw, yeah.
Yeah.
He's not
built to be taking hit from 6'5", 300-pound guys.
Well, he's not, but like I said, they have a terrible offensive line. So I get...
Oh, God, so bad.
I get, but at the same time, I do think one thing was pointed out in this game that no one really like, because I think everybody expected to be better. He's a good evader. He's not Michael Vick. He's not going to break off a 70-yard touchdown run off you guys. He'll get away from you. He'll buy a little bit of time, but I think his mobility and agility was a little bit less than what everybody expected. I think everybody expected him to make a lot of people miss, a lot of, like, I expect if the play broke down, he's going to go get you a first down with his legs. Maybe in short yardage circumstances, when you get them into, like, you know, third and 17, he's not running for 17 on someone after making a bunch of people miss. It's just, it's not realistic. In college, you could have done that. In the NFL, you're not going to do that. Guys are going to get to you. So,
right. And you could see that in his thought process. Some broken plays, he thought, I'll get out of this with my legs, and ended up losing a lot of yards on those plays or scrambling back and lobbing up an interception like he did.
Well, I mean, Kennard's second sack was that. Kennard's second sack was just not giving up on the play. I want to say it was either Snacks or one of the interior linemen got to him and held on to him long enough that when the defensive lineman finally fell, Kennard only needed to take a couple more steps, and Kyler had no option. He either had to take the sack or, you know, risk trying to chuck it downfield to someone that probably wasn't open. And he's got the arm to do it, but it is what it is. This to me felt like a big collapse, but we're going to talk about the Lions. Jay, first impressions, that defense, it's actually a decent defense.
All my notes, I have nothing on the defense that's negative because all my notes are negative.
Oh, good.
So that's like the barometer of that. And I was fine with that. Like, Slay had his man locked down. We didn't hear him that often, which I was fine with that. I was only a couple moments of concern with Jahani Tavai. I saw some plays where he had his back to the actual play trying to block someone, and all he had to do was turn around and tackle. But other than that, only one moment, I was fine on D. So I have some hope on that side of the ball.
Okay. All right. You mentioned the name. I literally was looking right at it. Though he only had two tackles, I do feel like Jelani Tavai's name was called quite a bit in this game, whether it was for disrupting the play or being able to, you know, take on a guy so someone else came free. His name was mentioned more often than I really thought it was going to. But, I mean, Russ, again, you have to look at the fact that we gave up 18 points in the fourth quarter. That's a big blemish against it. But when you think about the fact that we gave up 6 points up until then, that feels almost unheard of when it comes to talking about a Lions defense, no matter who they're playing.
Oh, absolutely. The first three quarters, it was like, hey, we got a unit here.
Yeah.
Right. It looked like it was everything advertised and better, right? Because the secondary was containing guys. And then I don't know if it's this rumor, you know, floating around that, hey, they got tired or whatever it is. Man, the fourth quarter looked, well, more like what we're used to. But I'm very encouraged by the showing. Three sacks by Kennard, okay. Running game did not look good for Arizona. The only concerns for me are Larry Fitzgerald, who operates out of the slot a lot. He kind of roasted the defense, right? Key play late, 45-yard reception. Over 100 yards himself. And then David Johnson was able to be productive catching the ball out of the backfield. So there's still some weaknesses to this defense, but the defensive line, as far as stopping the run game, that looks encouraging. That's starting to live up to the hype that we had going into the season.
Yeah, I mean, when you literally have a series that goes sack, interception, you start getting very happy with the defense because it looks like a lot of other defenses.
Good show.
On your point of if they, you know, I use air quotes, but this is radio, so you can't see me use air quotes, tired, I'll say this, and I said it all preseason, and I'm going to keep saying it until someone can give me a reason why it's not something I should mention. You're going to get gassed when you play a grand total of 2.5 quarters of football all preseason. There's no reason on earth that starting defense shouldn't have seen the field in some way in the first or second preseason game. I get you had guys banged up and guys that really couldn't go. You wanted to save them for it. As much of that first defense as you could have gotten out there for the first game and the second game, they should have been out there. They were going to get 2 weeks off with the third preseason or the fourth preseason game and then the week off and then the start of it. You were going to get almost 2 weeks of rest to get back and get good. You cannot expect this defense to play 2.5 quarters in a 2-month stretch and be effective for four quarters in a row. Because this isn't like the preseason. It's not, they don't look at you and go, oh, hey, it's the fourth quarter. All the starters get to sit. Bring in the backups. No, you got to play four full quarters. And yeah, you're going to get gassed. You're not used to playing four full quarters of football. You haven't done it in 6 months. So part of me feels like that was maybe Patricia trying to be, you know, smart. I'm going to rest my guys for the preseason. They're going to be fresh. But part of me thinks it may have backfired a little bit on them for, well, I probably should have played these guys some more so they were a little more game shape ready. Listen, Snacks is 6'3", 500 pounds. He's never going to run a, you know, 4.440 and, you know, be available. But you still need him as much on that first play of the first drive as you do on the last play of the fourth quarter drive. So I will agree with you that I do think they looked a little gassed. And I just think it was that. And I think Cliff Kingsbury was able to get Kyler into a mindset where it's like, listen, dude, you got nothing to lose here. No one expects us to win this game. Go out there and sling it. Go out there and just do everything you can. You have a veteran wide receiver who is going to lay out for you. Just go out there and do what you got to do. And they were able to execute. 18 points, some of that's on the defense, but 18 points isn't a fluke. You got to be pretty good to put up 18 points in a quarter. So I think it was a little combination of the two, to be honest.
One thing that I saw that was interesting that I still don't understand is after the game, Snacks went to Twitter and he apologized. Yeah. He said, I have something like, this is on me. I need to do better. Time to get back to work. Like, he was blaming himself directly for that loss. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that speaks to the energy levels in the fourth, but like, I still don't know how he's responsible for that game.
I think that's just leadership.
Yeah, he
that's
sees himself him as trying a leader. To take it. Yeah, I agree. He sees himself as the anchor and leader of that. I mean, can anyone argue he's the best defensive lineman on the team? I don't know that there's anyone you pick over him as the best in like defensive lineman.
Yeah, at his job, probably not.
Hmm. Trey Flowers, maybe.
Yeah, that's the only one I can, like, I'd have to look at it more. But if you're talking about best at what he does specifically, I'd say yeah.
He's the best run stopper we have. I mean, Trey Flowers, Daniels, they're great. I personally think if you're going to hand, like, there's no MVP to be handed out here. If you're going to hand out an MVP, it's a guy that I've been big on since we got him. It was Kennard. Kennard was everywhere.
Oh, he looked great.
He was everywhere. And I think part of that is because they had to hybrid the hell out of Kennard last year. He had to have his hand in the dirt and play linebacker. They needed him in too many scenarios. Now, they still need him, but at the same time, you've got three very viable down linemen that you can say, hey, go for broke. Almost like what you'd want to see them do with Jared Davis. Like, get that guy that can drop back in coverage so we can send you after the ball because you're a heat-seeking missile, and I hope we see more of it. Mm-hmm. This is the one I wanted to talk about this because this is the one part I'm going to pat myself on the back for because I spent all offseason and all preseason talking about this. There's one guy we got to talk about who had a better game than him, but Danny Amendola.
Yeah, you were right on that.
7 catches, 104 receiving yards. He really, I mean, to me, really did feel like Stafford's safety blanket. Where are you at?
100%. Oh,
there's Danny. Hit him. He played, I mean, granted, one of his touchdowns we could have scored on. He was wide open. But still, he was effective. He made that offense just look that much better. And I'm very happy about it. I really, like, I'm not right very often on this show. That's why I host it, so that you two can be right, and I'll just take the credit for it. This is one that the second he scored that touchdown, I'm like, you know what? This is going to, I was right on this one. He really is going to be a safety blanket for them. And it was fun to watch. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I liked it.
Yeah, that was one of my first notes I wrote down is, I guess Amendola is the safety blanket for Stafford. Like, he had such a big game. I had to check that Marvin Jones wasn't hurt. Like, I thought maybe he died and we didn't hear about it. Because, yeah, it was Amendola here, Amendola there, and the new kid on the Hawk for everything else.
Yeah. Well, that's the only thing that bothered me. I have Kenny Galladay, so I would have liked Kenny Galladay to do a little more. But, hey.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
I'm okay with
slow
it.
Slow down.
I'm okay with it. Yeah.
Got him.
Got to bring that back. Yeah, I agree. No, it's great. But this is the guy we actually do have to talk about. This is someone we've literally been talking about since he came in the NFL. We did the draft show. We discussed him. We were all a little puzzled when it happened, but I guess the way to say it, Jay, is because you're the one that tweeted this out, so I'm going to go at you first.
This was after his first catch.
After his first catch. That's fair. That's fair.
The definition of premature.
I don't know if, for those that don't know, TJ Hockenson, our first round pick this year, broke the record for receiving yards by a rookie in their first game. Six catches, 131 yards. This guy really, he really looked good. I can't say anything less about it. Jay, being Jay, tweeted out that he, you know, he had a little Gronk appeal to him, and to which I responded very quickly, whoa, whoa, whoa. But I do want to say, Justin, after you've seen this game, obviously it's a small sample size. We need him to do it a lot more. But are you all in on the Hockenson? Or are you going to kind of wait and see? Let's see how he does against the Chargers. Let's see if he's still doing this by week three or four.
I am all in. And that's not only because he's on my fantasy team, which is good for me.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, good for you.
It's very good for me. No, the fact that the way that we're built right now with Amendola and Marvin Jones potentially carry on if we start throwing to him too, Hockenson just gets to go. We just release him and he goes in the end zone. He puts his hands up and he catches the ball. And when he catches the ball on amazing slant plays down the field, he just has it. And he's like a tank going down the field. And I'm not trying to be like grandiose about it. There's so many other options that divert the defense's eyes that Hockenson's going to, he's going to appreciate some value from it. So I'm all in on the Hawk.
Mm-hmm. So, Russ, if you're Jesse James, are you going, come on, really?
Yeah, I left Pittsburgh to be a bigger part of the offense. Now I'm sitting on the bench with Marvin Jones. Maybe we're both dead.
Yeah. Listen, I think Jesse James is going to definitely contribute to this team. I really do. But I just think if you're Jesse James, you're going, I can't compete with that. That's just, no one's ever done that. So we've got to see what happens. I like this guy. I really do. I think he's going to be great. The thing that I enjoy about Hockenson is whenever you talk to him, he's someone who says, I like to run block. I like to block. That's something good. I want to hear that because our previous, four tight ends, they wanted to just be wide receivers, but they were 6'8". So it was a little tougher. So the fact that he wants to run block, he wants to get in there and be competitive, to me is great. And I'm looking forward to everything he can do. But, cool. Sorry, go ahead.
If we can just draw the Gronk comparison, though, with the blocking that you were mentioning, that was something he did well as well.
Mm-hmm.
And had 6 catches on 9 targets. That's a nice day. That's a Gronk nice day.
Yeah. Oh, listen, the comparison one for one on what you're seeing, it's there. But the problem is Gronk did it for 10 years.
There, yep.
If TJ Hockenson can do this for 10 years, and again, we're reaching way into the future here. If TJ Hockenson can do this for 10 years, he starts being talked about like Gronk, like Gates, like Gonzalez. He starts getting talked about in those ways. Again, you have to do it. One game isn't enough. You need to be that guy. So don't lose that fire. Stay hungry because we've said it all offseason. They have a lot of good young talent. They just need to make sure it all fits together and works. And this is the one that I brought up on text. And I discussed with you, Russ, because I remember you texting back. Jay, I know you text back, but I sometimes don't read them.
Fair. Very fair.
I'm so mean to Jay. We need to work this out. Jay, you and I need to go to therapy. There's something, I got some hostility. I need to figure out what it is.
Oh, man.
But this is one that it bothered me, and I think it may have bothered me a little more than it bothered you two. I don't understand how you can have a running back like Kerryon Johnson, and he gets almost equal carries as the backup running back CJ Anderson. I need that explained to me. So if one of you can explain it, I'd really appreciate it.
Oh, I have an explanation.
Okay.
Or you want to go first, Jay?
No, all I said was I can, so I'm listening to you. Yeah, I don't know how to do it.
All right, my bad.
Go for it, Statman.
Well, there's no stats. It's because I can't explain it. I can't explain why it's a good idea. This is very much what Patricia and what Bevel have done. Look the last couple of years in Seattle, nobody really takes over, right? Except for a couple of years with Marshawn, really. And that was because it was Marshawn, I suppose. They spread around and they don't let any one guy do it. And Patricia's been saying a lot of that, that's how he wants to handle the backfield. He wants to keep guys fresh. 16 carries a game lands you somewhere just shy of 300 carries for the year. You really want to stay under 350 because we see some awful year after effects once you get past 350. Sorry, I said no stats. But maybe they're being overly cautious to that, but it's the only thing I can think, and being reasonable outside of just being overly married to being a committee, is Kerryon was not running all that well. Like, he had one rush of 9 yards. He was averaging 3.1 yards per carry. So it's not like C.J. Anderson was doing any better. He was 3.2, also with a 9-yard rush. But maybe they were just trying to attack the defense differently because they have a vastly different skill set. Maybe try to spin this. But yeah, it's frustrating to see him not get 50 yards, to see him be far and away the most talented back, and really not used a lot, and watch Stafford throw 45 times for only a 60% completion percentage, which was, hey, one of my keys to the game was getting over 65, and well, here we are.
Yeah, well, and we did our over-unders there. Stafford, I believe, went over on the throws.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken, and I'm pretty sure we end up under? No, we got over on the rushes, because I believe we set the rushes at, was it 30?
As a team, it was 32 rushes.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, barely over that.
Barely, yeah. So, I mean, and like I said, I honestly, I want to believe that, A, because this offense didn't play very much in the preseason, this really was the feel it out for who we can use in what situations, and that hopefully you will see these numbers balance out to more of a 2-to-1 in the terms of carry ratio. But again, this, as you said, this could just be the way Bevel is. If you're up and ready, you're going to get the ball. We're not going to play favorites. Like you said, obviously, if it's Marshawn Lynch, you play favorites. But Kerryon is a good back. He showed flashes last year. I'm just hoping that he doesn't get, you know, washed out a little bit in Bevel's balanced offense, because you want to get the ball to the playmakers. Nothing against C.J. Anderson. He was amazing for the Rams last year when Gurley was hurt, sick, busy making TV commercials. I don't know what Gurley was doing at that time, because he, according to the team, wasn't hurt, but he wasn't playing.
He's totally hurt.
Yeah, he's totally hurt. So we'll see what happens. Moving on. Lions, after a tye, unfortunately, don't get a bye week. They have to play more football. So they're going to play I still call them San Diego Chargers, because L.A. doesn't need 90 athletic teams. So the former San Diego Chargers, now Los Angeles Chargers, come to Ford Field. This one's interesting. When I pulled up the Lions and all that, I fully expected us to be the underdog here. And we are by 0.2%. It's a 49.9 to 49.7 in the way of percentages here. Spotting only 2.5. So, you know, we're minus 2, or we're plus 2.5. The over-under is 47.5.
Wait, did you say 49% for both of those win percentages?
They don't seem to add up to 100.
Well, that's just saying that's a non-zero chance for a tie then. Uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's 49.9 to 49.7. So.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. So that means there is a 0.4% chance of a tie.
That's what I'm
Don't
saying.
Even. Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying. 0.02. Here we go.
Here we go. So let's just get into it. Let's get it over with. The Chargers, they looked all right last week. I watched as much of that game as I could. Again, you're playing against a team that doesn't have their best player anymore. So, But to be fair, Jacoby Brissett didn't look bad either. I was definitely impressed. Jay, you haven't really been involved in this one as much, so I'll let you go first here. You got the Lions, you got the Chargers, you got a lot of talent on that field. Where are you going?
besides home and underneath a sheet and not watching, I don't know. Like, I have a problem when it comes to trying to pick these games because I know on paper and I know on talent who should win based upon who's available. But that's not how things work in Detroit. The Chargers don't have Hunter Henry. He's out with I think he broke his leg.
Yeah, a fractured knee.
Yep.
Yeah, so he's done for a hot minute.
Yeah.
Melvin's done, and Mike Williams, he's probably going to be out too, who's more of like a wide receiver too for them. We should win based on talent, but being the home opener, and we actually, it's Lions plus 2.5, so they're giving Chargers the advantage even coming over from Cali. So that gives me some pause. I think it's going to be close. I do have the Lions going for a W, 30-24, but I wouldn't be surprised if I'm wrong. I could live with that, too, because that's what I'm used to my Sundays being. But I want this team to be good so badly, and especially when you're playing a Chargers team that doesn't have their stud running back and they're out a couple other athletes as well. It's like, take advantage of that. Trust Stafford, and let's get a W here.
Yeah, I like it. Russ, how about you?
So I had this as a loss in preseason.
Yeah,
we'll come back to that. So, yeah, like Jay said, no Melvin Gordon, no Hunter Henry, maybe no Mike Williams, no Derwin James, which is an underrated big thing there.
Yeah.
But looking at what they do have, Eckler looked real good, and that was mostly through the air, something that David Johnson exploited the Lions with last week.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen, as good as St. Larry is, Keenan Allen's better, and they operate out of the same formations, the same routes a lot of the time. So that scares me that, he could go for 113 easy. And then Bosa and Melvin Ingram are coming on the pass rush. And that offensive line did nothing to make me feel good last week. Because it was only Chandler Jones, really, that they had to worry about. And Terrell Suggs, when he dusted the old bones off his body and rushed a couple times there. But that's a different echelon of pass rusher to those two. I'm not confident in them. I think the line's about right. I've got 23-20, the Chargers walking away with a win. It's probably going to be ugly and not very high scoring. God, good luck. I hope I'm wrong.
I will say this one to me, I did kind of have to think on a little more than I usually do just because, like you said, there are so many guys not playing for that team, but there are so many players still on that team. To be fair, they stepped up and played a lot better last week than I thought they would when their number one running back and best player on their team is sitting at home in sweatpants, probably not caring because he doesn't have his money. Rivers, the defense was in Rivers' face all day. If you watch that game, Rivers was throwing some amazing passes, and I don't like to give Philip Rivers a lot of credit because I'm not a fan, but he made some incredible plays. That being said, I think that there's one thing that the Chargers might be underestimating is that we just gave up 18 points to a team we never should have gave up 18 points to in a fourth quarter. This defense is going to be out for blood. The Lions are going to make it their personal business to make sure more guys on that team aren't playing for week three because they're going to want to put, honestly, I would not be surprised if when they come off the edge, if Daniels and Flowers don't picture Kyler Murray when they're hitting Phillip Rivers. This is going to be them full on pin the ears back and just go, go, go. We don't care. Heave it up if you want. We're going to put you in the dirt every time. So I still think it's going to be a competitive game, but I think that this is going to be one of those games where the defense is going to take their frustration out on whoever comes by. I mean, it's a line from Friday Night Lights. Guy doesn't speak for the entire movie, gets in the locker room, goes crazy, and says it. I want you to hit everything that moves. If the ref gets in your way, I want you to knock his ass out. That's what you're going to see from this defense this week. I have it being a 27-17 win for the Lions. We're still going to give up some. There's too much talent on that Chargers team for them not to put some points up. But I think with Amendola stepping into that role that I saw him as, Hockenson playing well, I think that the running game is going to get a little more established now that they know where Kerryon and CJ fit. Listen, Stafford went out there and was, I believe, third in the league last week in passing yards. So he can still sling the ball. We're going to put up a couple touchdowns. We're going to need Prater to probably boot another 60-yard field goal because that's what Prater does. At some point this year, maybe. I fully expect Prater to kick like a 65-yarder just because I think he can. So, yeah, 27-17, and we're going to get a win. No ties. Don't make it close. 10-point separation means there's no chance of a tie. Just leave it at that. 27-17.
Six teams have started off the league, their league season 0-2. Just saying.
Nope. I can't take another. Three ties in 2 weeks would, I wouldn't be able to do the show the following week. Because I'll be in a psych ward just drooling in a straitjacket from going crazy.
Yeah, because then you're going to have, by the way, just a little show note, because then you're going to have Wisconsin, who's also on a bye this week.
Oh,
okay. They are. Oh.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
So that could be 4 weeks of like pure that. Hell.
I no. don't like that. No. all right. So as we continue on, we did this last week, and I honestly thought it was fun. Wasn't fun for me because the game I picked ended up just being a horrible, horrible game. Very one-sided. I picked Minnesota, Atlanta, and Atlanta decided they didn't want to know how to play offense. So
and Minnesota threw 10 passes.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Army out here.
None of this is escaping me. So, and then obviously since the NFL and college football is back, this week we picked it to be NFL. Honestly, as we get a little more, you know, games and all that, we'll probably expand it to just play of the week, but we're going to bring back play of the week. This week we went with NFL. So, we'll do play of the week before we jump into a following week or a new week. We'll do play of the week. So Jay, for you, what was your NFL play of the week this week?
Ooh, see, I banked two thinking that someone would take mine, but I'm going to go with my number one pick here.
I've got four because I know Russ somehow manages to look at my notes every week, even though we don't see each other. So.
And that's why I have three.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jay,
here we go.
We'll let you go first. You get your number one pick. What do you got?
I'm a sucker for a feel-good story. Makes me cry, and along with sports, I feel great about myself. Vernon Davis, his emotional touchdown that he had.
Okay, okay.
The physical jump over to get in and his will to keep powering through, and then obviously the emotional end with the passing of his grandfather. I will go for the human element every week for a play of the week. So that's what I got.
All right. Here's Justin's play of the week.
Third and two. Keenum rolling. Pressure throws. He's got a completion and a first down. It's Vernon Davis, the Angels one, who stays on his feet somehow. And he's going to brace to the end zone and get there. Touchdown, Washington.
137 years old, but he still runs a 4-4.
He does.
And look at him finish this one off.
All right, so now, Russ, your turn. I'll let you go because I have enough options I'm okay with that I'd be okay if you take
four.
Mine. Yeah. So for you, what's your play of the week this week?
Well, I'm going to go and steal from the one that I thought would be the game of the week, Mr. Long Range Lutz, 2 seconds left, 58-yard field goal, lining up thinking, oh, shit, I missed one from 56 earlier this game. But that's okay, because redemption was spelled L-U-T-Z. 58-yarder to win the game. I mean, Drew Brees setting up a game-winning touchdown or game-winning score. Who knew, right? That was an incredibly entertaining game and an incredibly entertaining way to end it. Longest field goal of his career. So long-range lust, I got to give it to him.
All right, I like it. And in case you missed it, here it is right here.
58-yard attempt for the win! Got it!
Yeah, that was definitely a fun game to watch. I enjoyed that one. All right, so Russ didn't take mine. We're good. I can go with numero uno. But, Russ, this is just great. Not knowing that he's going to pick a kicker, I did put something down that I needed to put out there, because if we can nominate this for worst performance of the week, I think it'd be good. Hall of Famer, arguably the greatest kicker of all time, Adam Vinatieri. He missed not one, not two. He missed three field goals in that Chargers game. That doesn't happen for Vinatieri. The guy is money if there is money. So I think I would like to nominate that for worst performance of the week.
Ooh, Can we do that now?
Yeah. Do the eyes have
yes, please. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Starting now, we will have worst performance of the week, but for right now, Vinatieri gets the inaugural spot. My play. To be fair, I actually, as I look back, I had three, but two of them were from the same game, and it's the game we've been talking about, the Chargers. I watched that one going through because I wanted to see how Jacoby Brissett did, and they had some great plays. They really were great. But for me, I just nothing gets better than when you give a running back the ball and he just makes a play that really wasn't there. So for me, it was Mac breaking it for 62 yards for a touchdown against that Chargers defense where he looked like he was going to get swallowed up after just barely getting the first down. And before you know it, 62 yards later in the end zone, I'm all about it. That was great. So if you didn't see it, didn't hear it, here's that play.
Please, what some of these other backs are getting because we've got an entire team we're trying to spread the money around to. So it's just a matter of them coming to terms on what happens.
Look at Marlon Mack go up the sideline. 15, 10, 5, touchdown. No penalty flags.
Well, and that was the answer they needed.
So those are our plays of the week, obviously. Put up the Twitter poll. Let you guys vote on it. Russ, I don't know if we actually did the math at the end, but I'm pretty sure Russ won last year when it came to NFL plays of the week. We just couldn't seem to beat him, Jay. I think you and I need to start combining our forces, Jay, because we're falling behind. We really are.
That and I need to stop voting for Russ's, because every time I thought I had a good idea, Russ would say something. Yeah, I'm voting for that.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So you can keep doing that. I appreciate it.
It's not helpful, Jay. It's really not helpful.
I know.
Okay, so now let's move on. Play of the week. We just did play of the week, in case anybody knows. Game of the week. I had terrible picks last week, and it was just not fun for me. So I picked two, and the one I'm going with is I'm going with Saints-Rams. Those are two, in theory, high-powered offenses. Aaron Donald and that defense facing off against Drew Brees and that offense, I feel like that's... It just doesn't get better than that. When you get two teams that are just that good and are both capable of just going off and scoring at any time, it's high anticipation. And it's a question of can that defense really slow down Drew Brees and Thomas and Kamara and all that. It should be a fun one. So I'm going with Saints-Rams as my game of the week. Russ, which one are you watching?
You got me.
I did.
You got me back, finally. That was going to be my pick. But I came with a second one because I figured you'd probably get me back.
Okay.
I'm going with Baltimore and Arizona.
Okay.
It's the offense that everyone thought was going to be special with the offense that's actually doing all of the things that they thought they would do. Baltimore coming out and absolutely pantsing Miami, making reportedly enough Miami players call their agents requesting for trades because they thought the coaching staff was tanking after that game.
Yeah.
They got beat so bad they asked for a trade. Like, that. What? Lamar Jackson, he's got a fiery chip on his shoulder with the whole, you know, you should be a running back talk and everything. And then, hey, Kyler, is he fourth quarter Kyler that we saw last week? Is he the first three quarters Kyler? It's probably somewhere in between, but it'll be real fun to watch two young, dynamic quarterbacks face off in what could be something that we see the NFL moving to. This could be a sign of the future. Or maybe not. I mean, maybe one of them will get absolutely decapitated because they're running around so much and not being protected. It'll be interesting. It should be fun either way. Mayhem will ensue. So I'm excited.
Yeah, it should be good. And I'm not going to lie. I loved his comment of not bad for a running back after that.
That was
just so
good.
Great. It was so great. Yeah, I didn't have that one, so you're all good there. We were on the same page for the first one, but that's a great second one. Jay, your game of the week will be?
Hopefully not a game where I get another quarterback killed, because that's what I did last week. But I'm interested in Philly and Atlanta, mainly because Philly has a serious offense again with Alshon Jeffery and DeSean Jackson. I'm pretty sure Darren Sproles is somewhere on that team, too, doing something useful. But I'm going that way. Atlanta needs to get back on the better side of the record books and get a win. And Philly looks dominant again, but I have Matt Ryan in one of my fantasy leagues. I don't need him to get hurt, but chances are high because I'm shooting one for one for injured quarterbacks right now.
Yeah, you don't want to do that, though, because Carson Wentz is just really injury-prone. You don't want to really risk him dying again because they don't They don't have anyone.
Nope.
All right, that's good. No one actually picked my second one, and my second one is literally just because they were the first two quarterbacks taken in the draft last year, and that's Baker going against Sam Darnold, Browns against Jets. I think it'd be fun to see. You know they're going to build it up as the top two guys and the quarterbacks who are going to be compared for the rest of their careers. Be interesting to see. Both teams have some talent, but both teams are not that good. So,
well, that might not be the matchup that we see because Sam Darnold got mono.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. And I don't remember who they're going with, but we'll see. Should be interesting. All right, so usually because we're, you know, football's back and hockey's just around the corner, gonna have a lot to talk about when it comes to that. Some stuff, you know, we found out. If we can get to it, we'll get to it. If we can't, we'll talk about it next week. But usually this is when best of goes on the shelf. But I saw something come across the screen the other day, and I took a screenshot of it. I'm like, you know what? I want to talk about this. We don't talk about basketball very often. It's just not, you know, something we, you know, get into very much. But I saw this and I realized this could be one of the best potential Hall of Fame classes in recent history if some certain guys get in. So I asked you guys to pick your five. I picked my five of, if you had to choose of this list of potential eligible Hall of Famers for 2020, who would you go with? The names were Tim Duncan. The picture just went away. Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, Elton Brand, Chris Bosh, that's Jay's pick, Andre Miller, Amari Stoudemire, Tayshaun Prince, Kevin Martin, Kirk Heinrich, and Caron Butler. I mean, obviously, if you know anything about sports or basketball, the first three guys I mentioned, are shoe-ins to go in the Hall of Fame because they're all arguably the best at their position to ever do it. So of the rest of that list, Jay, if you had to pick the five to go into the Hall of Fame, who are you picking?
I had a very difficult time with all the talent that was in front of me because I only knew five guys on the list. So
you picked that five
guys. So wait, that's not hard at all.
Well, no, I mean, like, I would have loved to actually be able to dive into it, but I only knew five dudes. It was a clean ticket. It's Prince, it's Stoudemire, it's Bosh, Bryant, and Duncan.
Wait, one more time. It's Prince, Stoudemire, Bosh,
Bryant, and Duncan.
Wow!
Did he say Kevin Garnett?
No, he did not say Kevin Garnett, arguably the greatest power forward of all time. Okay.
So I did preface this like 20 episodes ago. I don't know shit about basketball.
Okay. No, that's fine. I just to throw it out there for you. The name you left off, which is the name that you probably shouldn't have left off, Kevin Garnett, retired, averaging 18 points, 10 rebounds, and 4 assists a game. A guy who played the same position who you have on your list, the Bostrich, retired averaging 10 points, 5 rebounds, and 1 assist per game.
My man.
So
my man.
He was about 8 points, 5 rebounds, and about 2 assists behind Kevin Garnett in career averages. But that's fine.
Yeah, but did he have a good meme game?
No. No, he just headbutted the basket before every game. So,
I apologize.
That's fine. That's fine.
Segment right off the top.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And, Russ, save this. Save this. Abort.
So,
abort.
Well, I do have Duncan, Kobe, and Garnett.
Okay.
I do have those three. It's really, for me, it's those three, and then there's like a hard line.
Oh, yeah.
And I go, oh, I got to find two others, huh? And I really struggled. I was able to talk myself into putting Bosh in there. Out of the eligible players there, everyone that's eligible for this class, he had the 12th best win shares per 48 and 14th best win share total, 11-time All-Star, right? And all this was taking a backseat in Miami where he had win shares between 9 and 10 every year. for the 5 years leading up to him going to Miami. And then that dropped off considerably because, hey, he was the third fiddle and three superstars, but was still able to put up those career win share numbers. So I can argue him for being my fourth. Stoudemire kind of sneaks in as my fifth because, to be honest with you, I just liked him better than the other guys on that list. For the class itself, I'd put Chauncey above him because Chauncey's eligible this year. And I actually had to talk myself into that one, but his, because he only put up an efficiency in the top 10 one season, but had a hell of a career when you look at it as a whole. So, I have Kevin Garnett going into the Hall of Fame.
Good. Good call. Good call. A little round of applause for you. So, as the guy who probably watched the most basketball growing up, you know, my dad, big basketball fan, I enjoyed the game. I still watch as much of it as I can. The big three, Duncan, arguably the greatest power forward of all time, guy's super efficient, finished his career with just insane numbers of 19 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. Great player. Garnett, I mean, Kobe walks into the Hall of Fame just for being Kobe Bryant, but when you finish your career averaging 25 points a game, you're just better than everybody else. Like Russ said, after that, it's a hard line. For the life of me, I wanted so bad for a Piston to be in this Hall of Fame class, and Tayshaun's the only one that was on that list. Obviously, Chauncey's right there, too. But to me, 11 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists, those aren't Hall of Fame numbers. They're just not. He was a great player in the system. Once he left Detroit, you didn't really hear a ton from him. He was still a good player, but he was never that take-over-the-game kind of guy. We had 3 guys in front of him doing that before he did. So, for me, he just kind of fell away. My two were Amari Stoudemire. Guy was insane. If he could have stayed healthy, he would have probably been one of the best to ever do it. But
yeah, that was a big knock on him.
He had knee problems. Finished his career averaging just shy of 19 points a game, 7.5 rebounds, 1 assist. You know, decent numbers, but still, he was a great player. Just had terrible knees. Couldn't stay healthy. My last one is actually, I went with Elton Brand. The guy was just a very, very good player. Obviously didn't have he was only a 2-time All-Star. Didn't really have the illustrious career of everybody else. Played for some very, very, very bad teams in his career. He always seemed to be getting to a team right when they were either in their downfall or just before they started taking off again. So, it was tough on him. He spent a good portion of his career with the Clippers, and they were just a terrible team at the time. But finished his career averaging 16 points a game, 8.5 rebounds, two assists. He was just a good, good player. So, I went with Elton Brand. So I got Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, Elton Brand, and Amari Stoudemire going into the Hall of Fame. CJ, those are players that are good at basketball, not someone who was a really good GIF for you to use.
I'm going to have to Google this Kevin Garnett character.
No, you trust me. You know who Kevin Garnett is.
He played for Boston, right?
Yeah, he played for Boston. He played for the Timberwolves. Yeah, he was very good. You'll enjoy. Enjoy. He's a crazy person, but he was very, very good at the game. So he actually was the guy that started the trend of players coming out of high school. Uh-huh. He was one of the first guys to really do it and stick. So, he was the guy that really started the trend.
Oh, I got it here. Jay, you remember there's a basketball player where they always play the clip where he's screaming, anything is possible?
Yeah, I remember. This is Eric, but yeah, I remember him doing that. Yeah.
Well, that was Kevin Garnett. Yeah. I was hoping that was a pop culture reference enough for Jay to latch on.
No. Kevin Garnett is famous.
I remember that.
Kevin Garnett is famous for, before every game, the like underneath the basket, like the base of it that holds it up, it's padded. He would go up and headbutt it before every game. Every game.
Sounds like a psycho.
Oh, he's a crazy person. He's crazy, but he's an amazing basketball player. So, this is the last thing we're talking about. This wasn't on the rundown, but we've got a few minutes. And
Audible.
No. This is an easy audible because we've already had this conversation. We're just gonna have it, you know, together on the radio. And we just found out about it today. But I want to get your guys' opinion. We're going to talk about hockey. I want to get your guys' opinion about the fact that we're going with 4 A's and no C this year. It was.
I love it.
We've had this conversation. Ugh. Well, you love it for a very bad reason to love it, but
very specific.
Very specific reason. But I want to know your opinion. One, Russ, I'll let you go first here. One, is it a little bit of a knock that we say no to the C for Larkin, but you're going to at least get an A? You get a letter, it's just not the letter you wanted.
Well, I got a C. They better not be doing the alternating A bullshit again.
Yeah.
Like that. I get it for 1 year, right? He's a relatively young kid, and you're trying to step him into the leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kick the training wheels off. What do we got to lose here? It's already his team. You look at how he interacts with the fans, interacts with the media, interacts with his teammates. Does the guy need to be a point-per-game player to get it done? Oh, wait, he did that last year. Like, I don't understand how you're going to put him up there on the same level as Abby, Glenn Denning.
Well,
like, watch your mouth.
To be fair, and this is an easy answer, but you said it, so I'll ask the question. And Jay, if you want to chime in on this too, you can. I'll let Russ go first here. This is his team. Can you make a legitimate argument that anyone else can claim this as their team?
No.
Okay.
Hands down, Steve Eiserman would be the other one.
Well, yeah, okay. A guy that's actually going to step on the ice this year.
Let's not rule it out. That'd be fun.
That'd be awesome. But Jay,
it's Larkin or bust.
Jay, don't give me the name you're going to give me. But can you legitimately claim anyone else can say this is their team? We make the jokes about Glennie getting the C, and Jay loves Glenn Denning, and it's awesome. But in all seriousness, is there anyone else on this team, or? I mean, they haven't played yet. Somebody may be coming to this team, like Zadina or Valeno, who you could say is the guy on this team.
No, the dirty secret is that it's Larkin's team and he'll be the captain. But as of right now, this is Steve Yzerman's team. And if there's anyone who's going to know what it's like to be a captain, and you know, maybe he reflects on his own career and he's like, oh, man, I should have got it here and not here, it'd be him. So I love the fact that Larkin does not feel accomplished right now. I love the fact it's probably a little salty in the back of his mind, because that's what I need him to be a superstar. This franchise needs him to be a superstar. So him not getting the C actually sits well with me right now.
But any fear, and this is just the reporter in me kicking in, but any fear that maybe by saying no to the C now, that saltiness turns to this team doesn't appreciate me?
No, I don't think we've got that kind of culture in that locker room. No.
Ross?
The man's got to earn it. No, I don't think that's in Larkin's character. I mean, things would have to really go sour for like the next 3 years or so. He signed a long-term contract too, so he's kind of stuck for a bit.
Oh, no, I get that. I mean, and to be fair, good on him. You say you want to be the captain right at the time that arguably one of the greatest captains in sports history takes over the team he was the captain for. So, I mean, good on you. You got balls to try it. The thing I do want to talk, it's Larkin. It's, correct me if I'm wrong, Larkin, Abby, Nielsen, and Glenn Denning, correct?
Yep, those are the four.
Okay, those are the four. I mentioned this in the text, and I want to discuss it here. A little odd, Russ, no defenseman. I mean, not that there's many to pick from, but a little odd, no defenseman gets the nod. You mentioned it, that it was the first time since, I believe, Nick got the A way back.
Yep. Yeah, that was the last time we didn't have a defenseman wearing a letter. I think it was like Yzerman, Fedorov, and Shanahan had the letters there.
That's pretty understandable, but I get where we're going.
I guess I don't find it all that odd, because I don't think there's anyone on the back end that I would really give it to. Like, is Trevor Daley going to get an A? Mm-hmm. Is Mike Green being the elder statesman? Well, we're going to have to give it to someone else because he'll be hurt anyway.
I think Green's the only argument you can make, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. But it's with seeing how they're doing things with Abby having an A and having one for a while, it's the homegrown guy that, you know, the quote-unquote glue that they want to try and give this to. So, unfortunately, Glennie does fit that a lot better. And the decor that we have right now, hopefully, in a year's time, half of them are gone. So yeah. I don't know that you give a letter to a guy who's on his way out.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right. Like three of the four are homegrowns. So, Jay, the only question I really had, and this was, you know, this is, again, this is speculation and preference. Larkin, that makes sense. Abbey, he's obviously an elder statesman. You're going to give him, he's almost our Cronwall now. He's the longest 10-year guy. Kind of, yeah, I know. But I guess a little odd that maybe Mantha or Double A weren't up there as well.
Oh, yes. Ask Justin about Mantha.
Well, I know, no, but listen, as of right, I know that was poking the beast a little bit there, but listen, as of right now, if either of you want to argue this, I think that Larkin, Mantha, Anthony Cihou, talent wise, maybe not because we've had the conversation of who needs to get the next contract, but talent wise, those are the best three. I think in the needs of contribution to the team as an overall, Bertuzzi's right there as well, but I don't think he's getting an A. So if you're talking about best three talent, a little weird that, like Russ said, you had Yzerman, Shanny, and Fedorov wearing letters years ago. Those were the best three players on the team. So a little weird that one of our best players got the letter. The other two get left behind?
It's not weird at all because there's only two players on our team that, one, decided to threaten us by going to the KHL to leave us and had his own little mini work stoppage. And then the other one gets called out by their GM from being a passenger. None of those other guys had that kind of scrutiny thrown their way. Double A did his thing in the beginning of the year, and Mantha looks like he's ghostwriting his own hockey stick half the time. So I've got no problem with either of them not being acknowledged in that way because they've already had their deficiencies shown.
Yeah, I don't know how much you can take from Ken Holland, Mr. Deadeyes, telling you that Mantha looked like a passenger. I'm pretty sure he sleeps with his eyes open and was sleeping during every game because he didn't bring a lot of new talent to us very quickly. Russ, same question. I mean, a little weird that Mantha, Double A don't. I mean, Jay, you bring up good points, but a little weird that the other two top talent guys get left over for homegrowns?
No, I don't think so because the operating standard for this franchise is you're the old guy that paid for it and now we'll reward you.
Okay.
So a 24-year-old and a 25-year-old, while I think that shouldn't be a problem in assigning letters here, I don't think the organization is going to do that for the same reason. Apparently, they're not going to give Larkin a C.
Okay. I like it. All right, well, that's going to do it. I honestly don't have anything else. There's nothing else we can talk about, but give us a week. We can probably come up with a few more things to discuss. My thanks to Russ Ivanek. Russ, keep the mantra going. No ties, no ties, no ties, no ties.
No ties, no ties. 17 to go 0-0-2 to start the year. New kid on the hawk. Here we come.
Oh, gosh. Here we go. Yeah. Russ, we always appreciate it, man. You're the best, buddy.
Oh, thanks, man. It's always fun.
Jay Marcus, you got a fun full week. You got State. You got the Lions. It should be a fun week for you, buddy. I appreciate you taking the time. Can't wait to hear what you have to say about this week next week.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. I learned some things like Kevin Garnett, so it's a learning experience.
Well, I'm happy we can teach you things, my friend. I'm always happy we can teach you things. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought? Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.